The hotel is one of the longest continually run business in the downtown of De Pere, dating back to 1883. It's retained its history and its feel, and the downtown, fortunately, has also kept that same feel. We're just a part of a very interesting and unique, quaint downtown area.
Well, I started going to the Union with my parents when I was a kid in the 1950s. And then when I was working in the newspaper business in Milwaukee, when I'd come up to Green Bay, my wife and I would stay there for the weekend and dine there, and also did that when I was working and covering the Packers. So it's been a lot of years.
The population of De Pere today is roughly 24,000 people. We do have some manufacturing going on in the city. We're the location of St. Norbert College, which is a roughly 2,000 student enrollment college on the west side of De Pere, right along the banks of the Fox River. In fact, a number of Packers players and coaches end up living in De Pere. A lot of people are coming here because of the Packer connection that we have, and are always fascinated by the stories and the lore that goes with us and the Green Bay Packers. Just imagining some of the people that would have come through here from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and the glory days of the 60s.
I think what drew the players there and what draws everybody there is the character of the place. Been there since the 19th century, got a lot of history, well decorated, and just a comfortable place to go for dinner with a great bar.
The Union Hotel was built in the present building in 1883. It opened on September 1st of that year. Our family purchased it and took over ownership September of 1918.
My parents own the Union Hotel. I've been affiliated with this my whole entire life. I started working here when I was in sixth grade. My younger siblings and I would come after school, and we would stock the ice, stock the beer, and we would also change the menu slips. It would take a total of about a half an hour to 45 minutes, but it was our job every day after school.
It's been in business for over 100 years, even prior to the formation of the Packers in 1919, so a big part of it is just the clientele. You know, every head coach in Packers history has eaten there. It's kind of a gathering place on Saturday nights before Packer games. It just has a reputation for being not only a place of good food, but one that draws a football crowd.
We've been fortunate to be connected with the Green Bay Packers almost since the beginning, mainly by virtue of the fact that we were a restaurant that a lot of the Packer players, coaches, and team executives used as a regular watering hole and dining place for themselves. Tony Canadeo, a Packer great from the 1940s and the 1950s, was a Friday night regular. The Packer presidents, Dominic Olenicek, back in the 60s, was a regular customer here. Bob Harlan, very much a regular and still comes in on occasion to this day. Mark Murphy lives up the road from us here. We get to see him on occasion. Mike McCarthy lived in De Pere, came in on a regular basis. We would also have the announcers and their crews coming through here. Hank Stram is someone that comes to mind. Pat Summerall has been here. John Madden, whenever he tended to be in town, he would pop in. Al Michaels, Marv Albert, just to mention a few.
Players have always frequented the Union as far back as I know, and that goes back to the 1950s. Whether they went there on Saturday nights or Sunday nights after games, I'm not sure. But there are also some players who stayed there because they do have rooms upstairs.
One of the more significant Packer connections we have is Dad Brazier, who moved in here in 1941 and ended up on his passing, ending his stay in 1981.
Dad Brazier came to the area in the 1920s as football and basketball coach at Pierre High School. In the mid-50s, he was hired by the Packers to handle their equipment, and he handled that position under Lombardi. So he was very popular with the players.
He would sit out in the front lobby. We actually used to have a TV out in the front lobby. They would come downstairs and watch TV, and Brazier would sit out there. And he would talk to all the customers. He would have his Super Bowl rings on or whatever, and people would just ask him about it, and he was willing to talk to anybody about anything.
1961, Vince Lombardi decided he wanted to put a G on the Packers' helmets. But Dad Brazier, while he was living at the Union, was certainly part of the inner circle on that decision, and probably Lombardi's closest confidant.
His thought or his idea was to actually have a G in the shape of a football created as the logo. He may or may not have actually created some of his own sketches, but in any case, he had a gentleman working for him who was a student over at St. Norbert College by the name of John Gordon, who happened to be an art major. John Gordon's initial reaction was, "Wonderful, I get to come up with the Green Bay Packer logo." And his mind thought wildly of some of the different things he might possibly do. And then, of course, Brazier instructed him the logo is to be a G in the shape of a football.
My wife and I used to stay there late at night after the crowd died down. Jim and I would sit there and talk, and actually he told me stories about when Brazier was working with Lombardi on the G and how he'd bring sketches down to the bar and show them to him.
As far as the original sketches that were created, whether they were by Brazier or by John Gordon, actually they were shared here at the bar with my dad. My dad had fond memories of the logo being shared, and at the time my dad kind of poo-pooed it. He really didn't think that much of it. What's the big deal? And of course, in retrospect, it actually became kind of an iconic figure, an iconic logo around the world.
The Boyd family took over the hotel in 1918. That's a year before the Packers were founded. There's always been a close connection between the team and the family.
I was fortunate growing up because I actually lived pretty much right across the street from here. I was the oldest of eight children, and a lot of times just to escape the chaos of the house, I would come over here just to get away from it all. And of course, in that process, I could be around the hubbub and the excitement of the bar and the restaurant with all the people coming and going. I do remember coming in here and having, you know, different Packer players that would float in and out, and my dad on occasion would introduce me to these gentlemen and shake their hand, which I thought was just a wonderful thing.
My dad would call when we were little. He would call on a Sunday night, and I'd round up my friends, and we would bike over, sit on the corner, and wait for a Packer player to come outside. And my dad would say, "You can turn around and wave at him," and that was it. So we'd turn around, we'd wave, get back on our bikes, go back home.
A lot of times I was introduced to a number of different Packer players by my father, Ray Nitschke, Jim Taylor, Paul Horning, just to mention a few. We also had an old Packer player that dated back to the late 20s, early 30s by the name of Mike Michalski, who actually spent quite a bit of time here at the Union Hotel. He lived about six blocks from here and was good friends with my great uncles. And during the afternoons, a lot of times he would actually go back in the kitchen and help them roll rolls. I didn't realize at the time his significance in Packer history. He was one of the original inductees into the NFL Hall of Fame back in 1963, when the NFL Hall of Fame had its first induction class back then.
I think it was during the Holmgren years especially where you would almost always see an assistant coach or two if you ate dinner there on a weekend.
The Packers players, they would come here quite a bit, and the coaches, the whole staff would come here. They've been with us since 1918, which is an amazing feat. So I think it was more of a tradition. At certain times, it became a superstition with the Holmgren era. They would make sure that they were here on specific nights. The whole staff would come in on Sunday nights after the games. It was all separately, but they were all here.
Fred waits. Here is the play action fake handoff. Second guy, Bennett.
Whoa.
Walked into the end zone. Edgar Bennett with a hole on the right side that you could drive a truck to the Super Bowl through.
When the Packers beat Carolina in the championship game, Mike Holmgren came in afterwards, and he always sat in the main dining room. He would sit in the lobby and wait for his family, or they all came in together, but they'd always sit in the lobby first and look at menus. And then they went into the dining room, and everybody in the dining room stood up, gave him a standing ovation, and then sat right back down again and started eating. He thanked everybody and sat right at the table, and nobody bothered him the rest of the meal, but it was a really neat experience.
We were fortunate all through the years to have served every Packer head coach since the beginning. Obviously, Curly Lambeau was coach for about 30 years, so it was natural that he would come here.
Lombardi ate there when he first got to town, and I don't know if he stopped going entirely, but they didn't make exceptions for him with some of their rules, and he didn't like that.
I had a bartender told me a story of one night that he happened to come in here where it didn't work out quite so well. Vince came in with, as the bartender said, two big lugs from New York, crossed into the bar. Coach Lombardi said hello to the bartender. The bartender said, "Coach, how you doing? What can I do for you?" And Vince proceeded to say, well, the three of us would like to have dinner tonight. And the bartender looked up at the clock and realized it was 9:10. We stopped serving at 9 o'clock. So he told Vince, he said, I got to go in the back to see if I can get you in. So he proceeded to go into the back and ask my great uncles if it would be possible to serve Coach Lombardi dinner at 9:10. My uncles had a few choice words to the effect that it's 9:10. 9 o'clock means 9 o'clock. It doesn't matter who's out in the bar. So, of course, the bartender sheepishly had to go out and explain to Coach Lombardi that 9 o'clock means 9 o'clock, and unfortunately, we aren't going to be able to serve you. So one of the few times that Lombardi didn't have his clock set for Lombardi time, he ended up having not to eat here, and as a result, unfortunately, never came back to eat here as well.
Yes, I do believe in ghosts. I think there is a lot of spirits in this place. The building's 135 years old, and there's a lot going on here. They're here with me quite a bit.
Personally, I am not a big believer in that. I haven't had any encounters or any experiences. Not to say I wouldn't welcome it, but for me, I've been here all hours of the day and all hours of the night in varying stages of sobriety, and I have not been able to conjure up any ghosts here.
The ghosts happen to be everywhere, which is great. I think one of the reasons they're with me as much as they are is I was the first female to come work behind the bar. As far as some of the relatives, that wasn't an actual allowed thing at the time. You just didn't have females working in a bar. So I think a couple of them were really close to me and wanted me to work, and they're still here, and they're just making sure everything's going okay. I actually see one who walks through the basement, and I'm pretty sure it's my great uncle Harry. He will walk up and down the stairs through this area to the back of the basement and then walk back up the stairs again. He doesn't look at me. He just keeps walking. Looks like he's doing his job that he's always been doing for all of these years. And I'm happy he's here. He was a great asset to the hotel. When you see some of the apparitions that walk through here, they take you by surprise initially. And I actually speak to him because he looks like a real person. And then I realize it's not. And I step away and get a little scared, but not much. They're all friendly. They're nice, you know. I won't come in the basement later on, but... It's kind of three or four times a year that you actually see them. You always feel it. There's always a sense with you that there's something here, but you don't always see things.
There's something not right back here. I'm not sure why.
One of our other ghosts on the second floor is actually a gentleman who wears the early 1900 attire. He has a top hat and a long black cape. He actually looks like one of our Christmas carolers that comes in and sings at Christmas time. And the gentleman who actually saw him was a Christmas caroler that was caroling that night. He actually was getting ready in the room down the hall and looked down here and thought he was actually talking to his other caroler that he was working with that night. Obviously, it freaked him out just a little bit, and he came down and told me, and I thought, that's great, we got one more ghost. Here at the hotel, I've been approached quite a few times by mediums to come in and speak, and there's been a few that have come through that are amazing. Our little boy ghost, who is back in our room off of the bar, which we actually call the card room, was found by one of my mediums that had come through. She walked into the room 2 months prior to us actually getting a picture of him and said, did you see that little boy in the corner? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. What do you mean there's a little boy in the corner? And she said, there's a little boy sitting in the corner. And I said, oh, well, I said, well, it's kind of sad. I'm like, what era is he from? And she said the late 1800s, early 1900s, according to what he was wearing, what she could see. And I said, well, that's nice. I said, hopefully he's happy. 2 months later, this Christmas party was in there, and these couples were taking pictures of each other, and one of the couples ended up with a ghost behind their head that photobombed, was standing behind them. people ask me if they're affiliated with the Packers or if they're not affiliated with the Packers, the ghost. And I'm pretty sure there's one in here, and it's Dad Brazier, that is hanging out in this room because this was such an integral part of his life. I can't imagine he left here. And he sat in the booth room quite a bit and ate dinner every single night, you know, with my family, with my dad. So I'm sure he's here. I'm sure he's one of them that's hanging out in here. People have come through here and they'll ask about the ghost and then they kind of roll their eyes and they're like, oh, yeah, it didn't really happen. And I always explain to them that whether or not you believe it, it's fine. But you're not here as much as I am. You don't see what happens, and they're here. That's all there is to it. You know, we have a picture of one. They're definitely here. I hope they're here. I love that they're here. They're great. They're friendly. They're happy, and that's how it should be.
Packers with a home field advantage are the favorites, and kickoff time is just moments away.
My earliest memories of the Green Bay Packers were game days at our house, which of course was across the street.
Every Sunday, everybody would come over and we would watch the games. It was a lot of people in a small room watching the TV set. And Brazier would get extremely excited and frustrated, especially when they lost. And when Forrest Gregg was coaching, he would call Forrest after every game and talk to Forrest Gregg just to see how he was doing, you know, how the game went.
One of the things I learned was not to stand up during the game, that I was supposed to stay seated, otherwise my father would yell at me for getting up and moving around while the game was playing. So I learned to understand when commercials occurred so I could get up and move around.
McKim and I, there's a 9-year age difference between us. He remembers a lot more than I do. Unfortunately for me, I started when the Packers were in the 70s. And they weren't as good as they were, you know, back in the 60s. But we did know all the guys from the 60s, thanks to Dad Brazier. So for us, it was a different experience than other people.
All of the players back in the 60s were favorite players because they were just so great. I mean, you could rattle those names right off the top of your head quite easily. You could go through the whole offensive line, the receivers, the running backs, the defensive line, the linebackers, the defensive backs. Of course, I idolized all of them. I did start going to the games in the late 1960s, early 1970s. The hotel actually had two tickets in what they referred to as the kids section of Lambeau Field. So one of our bartenders by the name of Tuffy McCabe would drive us out at around 10 to 1. We'd arrive to the stadium parking lot. He would park at one of the homes right along the fence, and we'd get plunked down in our seat promptly at 1 o'clock, just in time for kickoff. I can actually close my eyes yet today and just imagine the feeling and the sounds and the crowd all around me. I can even smell the game when you'd go underneath at halftime and mill around amongst all the people trying to weave your way through the mass of humanity, and the smell of the popcorn, the smell of the stale beer that got spilled all over the place, and then there's the sound of the crowd underneath, hearing the roar. Today, our Packer tradition a little different. If it happens to be a home Packer game, a lot of times the pilots that they have for the flyovers come in for dinner the night before the game. A number of years ago, I asked them if they could just fly over the Union Hotel, and of course they obliged. To this day, invariably, they will fly over the Union Hotel. So one of my game day routines is that we'll jump up on the roof just before the start of the game, and we'll stand there and wait for the jets to fly over the rooftop of the hotel, give them a nice little wave, get down off of the rooftop, and then come down and catch the first series of the Packer game.
Snap to A-Rod, lofts right side of the end zone. Jones, oh, touchdown!
Beautiful!
Being a Packer fan, I would have to say it's ingrained. From a very early age, it really becomes a part of you. It's amazing how a whole weekend can center around the Green Bay Packers. Obviously for us, it becomes a whole weekend because it's a big part of our business. But game day, it's just a tremendous feeling of hope, and pride in the Green Bay Packers.
Going to the end zone. There's Dorsey Levin. Touchdown, Dorsey!
I'm an eternal optimist. I pretty much think that every year they're going to be 16-0, and no matter what the pundits might say, I just feel like they can win every game. When the game starts, I always hold out hope that somehow we can pull through and make the whole thing come together. It's strongly ingrained in us because it's so much a part of who we are and how we grew up.
As far as being a Packer fan, to me, you know, we're so lucky to have this team here and in this area. Again, I take it for granted on occasion because we're so used to it, and there so many of them are now our friends that for us it's a different level that we deal with this. But the fans are, the fans that come through town, me being a fan, it's amazing. You go to a game and the electricity is just unbelievable. There's nothing like it anywhere else in the whole entire country. We have people from all over the world that come here to see games. You know, they come in here the night before and sometimes they'll get a glimpse of an announcer or a referee or of a coach that just happens to be around. It's such an exciting experience. It's just such a neat thing to be able to have in this community.
I've been very fortunate from a very young age, growing up in the greater Green Bay area and being in a business that involved a large number of Green Bay Packer connections. Sometimes I take it for granted, but of course, as an adult now, I realize how significant this is and how unique it is. So I've been blessed to truly have a Packer life.